I'm Kelsall. Welcome to Beyond the Bio. Been trying to get you on the show for like a year.
Hello. And you had to come to me instead.
I know. But it is always good to see you. So just for a bit of context, how do we know each other?
So we used to work, we both had businesses at the same place under this little kind of tyrannical cretin who tried screwing both of us over and now he's disappeared. And I hope I never see him again.
That's probably the best introduction ever to how I know someone.
Yep.
So Beyond the Bio, all about personal branding, yep. And you do have a personal brand, even though we've just been talking earlier about how we hate that term.
Yeah.
And I would say you've built your brand on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And you are interesting in the sense that you are one of these people that says you don't need to post on LinkedIn all the time.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
I think it's like anything. I've built it on doing exactly what everyone in the corporate space doesn't do, right? So I got on LinkedIn really early. I've grown an audience organically, no pods, no fucking asking people on WhatsApp groups to like me or follow me or whatever. It's just people who like my content, that's it. And I post when I've got something relevant to say or something that I think is gonna blow up or that's gonna get me something, right? I'm on there to build a business. I'm not there to make friends. Like, I'm there to make money and the one place that I always start, even when I'm building a business, a brand, is I look at what the competition is doing and then I don't do that. That's always the starting point, right? And that's what I did. So I came out of a world of, you know, like everybody does, where you're working, you think you've got to be a certain way and you think professionalism looks a certain way and dresses a certain way, right? And it's a load of old white blokes in a boardroom slapping each other on their arse and telling each other how good golf was on Saturday. Whereas in reality, that's not how I see professional. Like, I swear, I've got tattoos. You know, I make adverts with Hitler on them as a joke. I do some pretty mad stuff, and I've done some pretty mad stuff over the course of my career. But I do it because I know it's going to stand out and because I believe that professionalism is about whether or not you do a good job. If you say you're going to do something, you do it and you do it well. Mm. You know, you don't fucking overpromise and underdeliver. And that's being professional. It doesn't matter how you dress, how you speak, how you look, who gives a fuck, right? And the thing is as well is being like that, I'm a big believer in setting the right dynamic with when you're working in business with people, right? So most people go in with a cap in hand to clients.
Yeah.
Please, sir, can I have some more, sir? And it sets a dynamic where the client's here and you're here. Whereas I just don't believe in doing that. Like you should be on an even keel, right, as a minimum where you're working together. But for me, if someone hires you in for your expertise, you should be here. You're the one telling them how it works and what to do. That's what they're paying you for. And if you haven't got that client dynamic, that's where a lot of businesses go wrong. So that's why I operate like I do. That's why I'm blunt. That's why I'm straight to the point. And that's what I'm there to push boundaries.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I would say is who you are online should be the person that you sat in front of face to face. So for you, like that, obviously I know you well enough to know that you on LinkedIn is how you are in real life. So I totally get that.
Yeah.
Thinking about LinkedIn, what's the biggest mistake that you see other people making on LinkedIn?
The biggest mistake is trying to do what everyone else does. You know, the templates work. I suppose when you're starting off, they can do because it teaches you how to write in a certain way. But for me, the whole point of building a brand, right, is if the tone and the thing that you say and things that you post, if you covered up your name at the top, would people be able to say, yes, that's Sophie Milliken, that's Dan Kelsall, right? If you're not able to do that and I can just cover up your name and that looks like any other generic post, I don't care how viral you go or, you know, how many fucking likes you get from India or fucking Indonesia, right? You're not building a brand there. Yeah. So you want to talk about personal brands. Yeah, it's a wanky term, but you want to talk about actual brand, building an actual brand. Your name needs to be distinctive with a particular type of post, a particular type of tone. And if you're not doing that, you ain't building it. You ain't building it. You're doing it pointlessly. And I think a lot of people, when I see them joining these pods and using this templated shit and all the rest of it, you're getting numbers. But they are vanity metrics,
yeah,
right?
Totally agree.
Big numbers aren't vanity metrics. If they're off the right people, it's not a vanity metric. The more numbers you get off the right people, the more business you're going to do. But just doing the same as the stuff that everyone else is doing might make you feel good because of the dopamine hit, but you ain't building a brand.
I just did a post literally last week, it might be earlier this week, can't remember, about the vanity metrics because I like it when a post does well, but actually the posts that make the money are sometimes the ones that have got the lowest level of engagement in. So we were recently promoting a writing retreat. Now, that has got a very niche, small audience of people that are going to be interested in attending a writing retreat. Yeah. But every time I did that post, I knew it wouldn't do very well from a likes perspective. But every time I posted about it, we sold a space. So you know, it is totally, totally worth doing it.
Exactly.
So when you're posting, you know, there is a bit of a fine line between being bold and being offensive. Yeah. How do you know what that is?
It's a good question. See, with me, I think I lost the line a long time ago. But for me, I've got a particular type of brand. I think a lot of the concern when I work with a client is they come in and they think, is this guy just going to draw dicks on everything? The reality is, and they would be right, yeah. But the reality is you find the boundaries by continuously pushing a little bit further. The boundaries are never where you think they are. Everyone's so safe in business because they think, if I say that, or if I use the word crap, or if I use this or use that, then I'm going to put clients off, or some of my clients I've got are going to leave. It's rarely the case. The boundaries are never quite as risky as you think they are. And the problem with people getting offended online by stuff is, number one, if used right, that can actually do your business a lot of favours, right? You're only ever going to sell to certain people. You're never going to sell to everybody, right? So trying to sell to everybody, actually you just become indifferent. But finding those boundaries can be a powerful thing, and it can be used if it's used correctly, right? As long as you're appealing to, and that's why I get clients, and I think anyone who's got a business should not only be taking time to profile and identify a target audience, they should also be profiling and identifying a target enemy. I'm not saying that you have to go and attack those people, but what I'm saying is, like, for instance, if my target enemy is old white blokes on LinkedIn, I know that if I piss those people off, I'm not bothered by it. It doesn't make me feel anything. I'm not sat there crying because some old bloke who's never going to buy off me has had a pop at me. So brands need to be doing that, because I think it's an important activity, because it reinforces who your customer is and who you're trying to sell to. And if you actually speak their language, there's always, as a byproduct, you're going to piss off some people, and that's okay.
And have you ever thought, maybe I've gone too far with this one?
Yeah, there's been a few I've gone too far with. I mean, I've pitched a lot of mad stuff. I was on a barge in the middle of the Spree in Berlin at one point on a party for a brand called N26, who are Monzo's competitor, and they were coming over launching in the UK, and I pitched to their marketing director. I said, if you're launching in the UK, why don't you put billboards all around Monzo's offices saying German invasion imminent? So I didn't get invited back to the year after party. But you know, I've done some pretty mad stuff. I did the first CV online for Theresa May as soon as she quit. I mean, I did that within seconds. That got about, I think it was on about nearly 30,000 fucking likes by the end of the day. But then it went over to the States, and the States don't get our ironic humour. They don't understand how we can laugh at politicians, because they all love theirs, don't they? And then there was a women's rights group got involved over there, and it was all sorts of...
How do you handle that kind of backlash? Do you just ignore it?
Yeah, I mean, things are going to go the way they're going to go. You have to stand by what you do and what you say, and if an apology is necessary... Eventually, an apology is necessary, and you have to suck it up and do the apology, right? Mm-hmm. Which I have done before. I did a post once about DPD, and I was kind of slagging off their drivers, and they always chuck me parcels in the bin and all the rest of it. And someone pointed out that it's not the low paid delivery drivers that are at fault here; it's the systems. It's the pressure to deliver things in such a short space of time, right? And that's where the sloppiness comes from. And if you were on £7 an hour. Yeah. Would you be chucking parcels in bins if you've only got 5 minutes to deliver them? Yeah, I probably would. And they were right. And I took that post down, apologised. I don't apologise to DPD because you're shit. But the delivery drivers themselves, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Why do you think so many brands do play it safe with their marketing?
Most of it's fear. It's like we said before. I mean, fear stops a lot of people doing anything, really, doesn't it? It stops us all taking risks. And I think... I think they assume that if they say the wrong thing or they use the wrong language, a customer will leave. I mean, that rarely happens. Unless you're racist or homophobic or you know, you're a bit of a bellend, then it's just not going to happen. Like we said before, the risks are never as risky as you think they are. And if you're a smaller business and you're less known, the market, every market nowadays is not saturated. And even if you enter a new market that's not saturated, it will quickly become saturated when people realise you can make money in it, right? So standing out now is more difficult than it's ever been. People see ads and content, like rafts of the stuff every day. People are becoming ad blind and content blind, right? So if you're not prepared to do anything different, if you're not prepared to stand out, especially as a small business, that's equal to death. You're going to die.
So who do you think is getting it right?
In terms of small businesses or big brands?
Whoever you think is doing...
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you don't know, you don't see people's balance sheets. I'm not one of these people... You get a lot of marketers in the marketing community slagging off adverts or telling you an advert is brilliant or telling you a social media post from Ryanair or KFC is brilliant or hilarious, right? But here's my problem with that is if you're a marketer, unless you know the results that have come from an ad campaign, unless you can see the revenue generated, you know, unless you can see the metrics on the back of that ad campaign, how do you know it's a good piece of marketing? You have no idea. Ryanair's social media and their whole understanding of their audience is absolutely hilarious. It looks on the face of it like it's successful. But again, I don't know the company balance. I don't know how well the company's doing from those actual ad campaigns and what channels bring in the most revenue. I'm not aware of that. So as a marketer, really, I should have enough understanding and awareness of what our job is to not actually comment on it. I don't comment on whether an ad's shit or whether it's not, or whether a brand's good or whether it's not. I haven't worked there. I don't know.
It goes back to those vanity measures. Doesn't it?
People always do that. People go, it's such fantastic. The social media team of Duolingo are so fantastic. How do you know? Well, because you found the tweet funny.
That's that.
You're a marketer. You don't know. The only thing that matters is what the metrics are on the back of it. And you don't know that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's what it's got to be about, hasn't it? Everything else is irrelevant, really. Yeah. How can smaller businesses apply your no-bullshit approach to their own marketing? What can they be doing?
So start off small, right? Start off small. My biggest thing with... If you're a small business, you can't operate like a corporate, right? It has to be strategy second. Marketing strategies are important, right? You can't just do a load of tactics and hope that it works. Marketing strategies are important, but they should be written once you've learned something. What a lot of people do in new businesses, particularly products, they go out and they go, let's go and do a focus group, right? And I've got a problem with focus groups as well, because focus groups, if you ask people a question, they're obliged to give you an answer, right? Whether that answer's right or not, or actually how they feel, it doesn't matter. They'll just give you an answer because if they're in a room, they feel like they've got it. Whereas you need to be acting and doing campaigns and building a strategy based on behaviour. And the only way you're going to find out how an audience behaves towards your product is to test lots and lots of different ideas through ad campaigns, through content, through other means, you know, through different channels. The more you test early on, the more things you try, the more tactics you try, the more information and data that you own, you have to build a strategy around. And that's a lot smarter than sitting in a room with your finger up your ass for 3 months, building a marketing strategy that might fail, because that whole three month period there, not only is it going to kill you because you're not going to have that much time as a startup, but it becomes a big loss making exercise if you do it that way. So test.
And that goes back to taking risks as well and having a go and doing something and taking
action. And if you're small and no one knows you anyway, if you make a mistake, in 6 months everyone's forgotten. So take the risk.
Mm-hmm. What's your favourite piece of savage feedback that you've ever had?
Savage feedback. Probably. I mean, I got offered out on LinkedIn once. I think you might remember this when we were in grad such days, and it was a big scaffolder, owned a scaffolding firm, and I pissed him off with something about maternity pay. I think I commented on, and he offered me out and said, you know, I'll fight you $20,000 each. And I said, I haven't got $20,000. And he said, right. Well, I'll tell you what. Any amount you want, we'll meet in a gym. I'll put boxing gloves on and then I'll rip you apart with my bare hands. And I said to him, well, if you've got boxing gloves on, how are you going to rip me apart with your bare hands? To which point he called the office. But I've had a few things like that. I've had a few hairy situations where people have said they'll come and meet me and things like that, which is fine. You know, if you're small. I haven't. No, no one's actually turned up yet.
Yet. Still time. Dan, it's been great having you on the show. If anyone is not already following you, is LinkedIn the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, LinkedIn, pub. In fact, no, I don't go pub anymore. I've got a baby. I spoil that, honey.
Those days are gone.
Those days are gone. Yeah, whatever. Just, if you need help, drop me a line. I know I seem like a bellend, and I'm actually quite a nice guy. I will help people out. But yeah, in a minute, good to chat.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you're serious about growing your profile, take our free profile assessment quiz to see where you're at right now and get hints and tips on how to improve your score. You'll find the link to the quiz in the show notes. If you've enjoyed the episode, it would be mint if you'd subscribe, like, and leave a review. See you next Monday.